Morning. Today's daf in Shabbos is Mem Vav. We are in Mem Hey Amud Beis. We're about a dozen lines from the bottom of the Amud. We're starting with the words today. Amar Le Abaye Le Rav Yosef. The Gemara over the last couple of dapim discussed the issues of Muksa. Muksa is the second half of the third parak of Shabbos. Muksa comes again later in the Masechta as well. This is obviously our first introduction to the world of Muksa, and we have spent now 3 blot discussing the topic. We're going to be discussing it another 2 blot. Today's daf Mem Vav and tomorrow's daf Mem Zayin. And with that, we conclude the third parak, and with that, we conclude at least the first round of the discussion of Muksa. Muksa, a prohibition that was legislated by the Chachamim, so that something that does not have any relevancy for Shabbos, one is now allowed to move that item. Touch a little bit of a misconception that one can't touch muksa. Generally speaking, one can touch muksa. The issue is moving muksa. Muksa is described in the Gemara as tiltul, and so the prohibition of muksa is one is not allowed to move the muksa. We have spent most of our time, and we were occupied with the discussion of the scope of muksa, which kalim are in fact going to be subject to muksa, and this we had a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. The truth of the matter is there are other sheets amongst the time as well that we were introduced to. But in terms of just streamlining the Gemara, so we have basically 2 positions. We have Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda is le muksa. Rabbi Yehuda has a number of categories of muksa that are incorporated within the legislation of the Chachamim. Muksa machmas miyus, muksa machmas iser. He has the concept of migizis katse ben ashmashos. So if you have been with us for the last couple of dapim, so you understand those categories. As opposed to Rabbi Shimon has an extraordinarily limited scope of muksa. Yesterday in the Gemara, we went through the very limited scope of muksa that is encompassed, incorporated within the shita of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon does not subscribe to the principle of migudis katzei ben eshmashos. Rabbi Shimon doesn't subscribe to muksa machmas iser, nor does he subscribe to muksa machmas mius. What muksa does he subscribe to? So it's extraordinarily limited. It's basically anything which is set aside for a mitzvah. So let's say for example, sukkah over the course of sukkahs. So the sukkah itself is huksa lemitzvaso, and so therefore, according to Rabbi Shimon, since it's set aside for a mitzvah, it is in fact going to be muksa for the 7 days of sukkahs, but only during the time of the mitzvah. Additionally, when I'm lighting Shabbos licht, so while the Shabbos licht are actually, while the lantern is actually lit, so then it is huksa lemitzvah, and therefore one cannot one cannot move it, according to Rabbi Shimon. After, however, the candles go out, on Shabbos itself, it no longer is going to be muksa. And those are, that would be examples of muksa according to Rabbi Shimon. Also, what we discussed yesterday, is that Rabbi Shimon says that if you're dachya biyadayim, if I push something off, I do a positive action to clearly demonstrate that I'm not interested in that item, that too is going to be muksa, like Tzimukim grogris. Grogris with tzimukim, dried figs, dried grapes, otherwise known as raisins. So when I put them up to dry, so during the drying period, so they're going to be muksa. That's another example of muksa according to Rabbi Shimon, and that the Gemara says is it. Those are the examples of muksa according to Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Shimon presumably does not have any other categories of muksa. And what we've been discussing in yesterday's daf on Mem Hey is where do the Amoraim lie on this divide of muksa? Do the Amoraim side with Rabbi Yehuda? Do the Amoraim side with Rabbi Shimon? So yesterday we spent the first part of the day discussing the sheet of Rav. Rav's position is that he holds like Rabbi Yehuda. And the Gemara spent a little bit of time going over Rabbi. Rabbi, albeit being a Tana, but he's a late generation Tana. Where does Rabbi stand on this? The Gemara did not arrive at a conclusion where Rabbi stands on this issue. What about Rabbi Yochanan? That's where we ended off yesterday's daf. We said that Rabbi Yochanan holds like Rabbi Yehuda. There was a point in time in yesterday's daf where we assumed that Rabbi Yochanan holds like Rabbi Shimon, but the Gemara's conclusion is that Rabbi Yochanan holds like Rabbi Yehuda. And now, picking it up right where we left off yesterday, Amalei Abayla, Rabbi Yosef, we're towards the bottom of Mem Hamad Beis. So Abai says to Rav Yosef, "Valo tizbar to Rav Yochanan to Rav Yehuda." You are not of the position that Rav Yochanan holds like Rav Yehuda. Ha Rabbi Abba v'Rav Asa ikla lebei Rabbi Abba de min Chayfa, and he tells him the following anecdote: Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Asi went to Rabbi Abba the Min Haifa, v'nafa menorah taglima de Rabbi Asi. And what happened was is that on Shabbos, a menorah fell on the cloak of Rav Asi. V'lo tiltala. And he considered it to be muksa, meaning the menorah itself is muksa, and therefore he did not allow him to move the muksa, and also he did not allow him to move the cloak as well. And it would only, and obviously we're assuming that the menorah already went out, and this only would be a psak if in fact Rabbi Yochanan held like Rabbi Yehuda and not like Rabbi Shimon. So my time in the Gemara just simply makes that assumption. Now, there are a couple of assumptions built into this. Number one, this is not an assumption. We know that Rav Asi was a student of Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan ka Rabbi Yehuda sfer lei deislei muksa. And we're going to assume that Rav Yochanan holds like Rav Yehuda when it comes to muksa, and that's why he prohibited the moving of the menorah, because he subscribed to Rav Yehuda. So we're going to be assuming that Rav Asi follows like Rav Yochanan. We're going to be assuming that Rav Yochanan passes like Rav Yehuda, and that got us to this point. Amrle menar kamart. So Rav Yosef is now responding to Abaye, and Rav Yosef says to Abaye, "Look, first of all, the evidence you're bringing is anecdotal, and even if we're going to work with the anecdotal evidence, but the conclusion you're arriving based on the anecdotal evidence is just simply an incorrect conclusion. We're talking about a menorah, menar tashani." The menorah has its own issues altogether, and it's not necessarily related to muksa. Let's start slow. It may be related to muksa, although in a moment the Gemara is going to even move away from this thought process. It may be related to muksa, but a different type of muksa altogether. And how do I know that? The Amar of Achi Bar Chanina Amar Rabbi Asi Hora Reish Lakish B'tzidon Menorah Nitalas B'yado Achas Mutal Ataltala. So Reish Lakish offered the following psak in the town of Tzidon, that if a menorah is carried in one hand, meaning it's a lightweight menorah, and you can carry it in one hand, so that is mutar l'taltala, that's not muksa. However, if it's such a large menorah, the only way it can be moved is with your two hands, also l'taltala, one is not allowed to move it. And Rav Yochanan Amar, now Rav Yochanan disagrees with Reish Lakish, and he says, "Ein anu." Anu ein lanu ella b'ner k'Rebbi Shimon. When it comes to a ner, so there we're going to be paskin like Rebbe Shimon. Now, exactly what Rav Yochanan means by that seems to be the following, and this is what Rashi seems to indicate. Right, Rashi, it's the last Rashi on the Amud. Ella b'ner yashan k'Rebbi Shimon dematir. When it comes to a ner yashan, so we're going to be following the position of Rebbe Shimon. Now, it's difficult to understand that. What Rav Yochanan is saying over here is that we pass them like Rabbi Shimon because the entire premise of the Gemara over here is that Rav Yochanan doesn't pass them like Rabbi Shimon, rather Rav Yochanan pass them like Rav Yehuda. So what probably the Gemara means over here, and again, I'm going back to Rashi, the last Rashi on the Amud. So, Ava menor v'chulei hilkach. Ilav mid Rav Yitzchak lo hava yadan alei. Ava hashta yadan de k'Rav Yehuda sfirlei. Bekulu. So the way Rashi understands it is that really Rav Yochanan fundamentally agrees with Rav Yehuda. Bar mi muksa machmas mius diner yashan. The Rav Yochanan viewpoint is that although he is pretty much in line with Rav Yehuda, with one notable exception, and that is that Rav Yochanan feels that when it comes to the category of muksa machmas mius, just because something is disgusting, that in of itself would not create a status of muksa. But the muksa machmasisr and the migudis katsay ben ashmashos and the general categories of muksa that are established by Rav Yehuda, that Rav Yochanan agrees to, with notable exception to muksa machmas mius. Now that, in of itself, by the way, it's super interesting, because basically, the way the Gemara is presenting Rav Yochanan right now, and admittedly things are going to change in just a bit, but the way it's presenting it right now is that Rav Yochanan agrees with Rav Yehuda, mostly, but not all the way, meaning he doesn't agree with the principle of muksa machmas mius. And it's interesting that Rav Yochanan has this kind of ability where he can paskin like a Tana, but not thoroughly in lockstep with every part of his position. Okay, but meanwhile, let's come back to our Gemara. So Rav Yochanan, regarding the menorah, Rav Yochanan says, "Ein lanu alek b'ner k'Rebbi Shimon." So again, as we explain, basically saying is that although I fundamentally agree with Rabbi Yehuda, but nevertheless, when it comes to the topic of Muksa Machon Shmios, there I'm on board with Rabbi Shimon. Ava Menorah, but now this is Rabbi Yochanan explaining his position regarding a menorah. Beinitla biyado achas, beinitla b'shteyadav asar, letalkala. Rabbi Yochanan says, as far as a menorah is concerned, I don't care how it's held, lightweight menorah with one hand, heavy menorah with two hands, it doesn't matter to me. It's always going to be asar. The time of mine, now why should that be? Rabbi Rabbi Yosef Darmitar Vayahova Adam Koveh Alamako. Now the first explanation of why Rabbi Yochanan is going to be prohibiting the movement of a menorah on Shabbos is given by Rabban and Rabbi Yosef, and they say it has something to do with the fact that Adam Koveh Lo Makom, a person establishes where the menorah is going to be and keep it specifically in that place. Now what does that mean exactly? So it's not totally clear from the Gemara. The Gemara just simply describes it as you have one established place for it. So this could be that this falls under the category of Muksa Machmas Chisaron Kis. Now, admittedly, we have not really covered this topic yet in the world of Muksa. We haven't formally introduced ourselves to this idea. But as we're going to be seeing upcoming in the Gemaras regarding Muksa, there's this idea that when something is so special to you, it has, let's call it significant monetary value, but it doesn't have to be even monetary value. It just simply is very meaningful to you. And in general, you don't move it under normal circumstances. You move it under very limited circumstances. So this is a category of muksa machmas chisaron kis. It's muksa because of its value, of its high value to you. And so therefore, what the Gemara now is trying to argue is that the reason why Rav Yochanan holds that the menorah is muksa is because it falls under this category of muksa machmas chisaron kis. And this is the explanation that's given by Rav and Rav Yosef. So Amalei Abai Rav Yosef Abai says Varekilas Chasanim. So Abai says, let's consider the following. Let's move the discussion over to a canopy bed. Kilas Chasanim, a canopy bed. When we're describing canopy bed, the canopy is not going over four poles, and we know that that can't be the case because assembling and disassembling a canopy that has four poles would be prohibited on Shabbos. That would be an ol arai. That would be considered an ol. And one is not allowed to put up or take down an OL, even an OL Arai. What we're describing over here is that it is triangular in shape. And basically what happens is that there are two poles, one in the head and one in the footing of this bed. And what this canopy is doing is just simply going over and up and down. It looks like an inverted V. And so over here it does not have a roof. It does not halachically qualify as an OL. And Amar Shmo Mishum Rabbi Chia, Kilas Chasanim, as now we turn to the top of Mem Vavam and Aleph. Mutal and Tosa, Mutal Laparkar B'Shabbos, that one is allowed to take it down. Let's go in the correct order. One is allowed to put it up, one is allowed to take it down on Shabbos. Now, if we're subscribing to this idea of Koveh Lo Makom, that you're establishing a fixed place, so then it shouldn't matter. The same halacha that we said regarding the menorah should apply also to the Kilas Chasanim, meaning your Koveh Lo Makom. And as a result of that, it is going to be something which is muksa. Muksa certainly wouldn't be allowed to put it together. It wouldn't allow to build it up. You wouldn't be allowed to take it down. And so if we're subscribing to this idea of koveh lo makom, so as much as the menorah is muksa, so is going to be the kilas chasanim. But we know we have a ruling that's given to us. And this ruling is given in the name of Rabbi Chia. The Gemara is assuming that Rabbi Yochanan is also going to subscribe to this as well. That one's allowed to move the Kilas Chasanim. So, it can't be that this Koveh Lo Makom is really going to be the critical issue in this regard. Elam Rabbi, so the Gemara now is going to be moving, and it moving to a different Svara. Why exactly is Rav Yochanan prohibit the moving of the menorah? So, Elam Rabbi B'Shachuyos. So, Abai says that what we're describing over here is that the menorah is made up of segmented pieces. And since this menorah basically can be broken apart and put back together again, so as a result of that, that is why Rav Yochanan prohibits the moving of such a menorah. The Rashi points out over here, it is the second Rashi on the Amud, b'menorah shel perakim, shemetipol, what may happen is that this menorah may fall, v'tisparek, and break apart, v'yachzirena v'nimsa osekli. And you're going to put it back together, and by doing so, you're going to be making a kli. Now, Rashi over here is not super clear about what violation, which malacha one is violating when one puts together the menorah. But because one would be violating a malacha, in a moment I'll make an attempt to explain which malacha one's violating. One's violating a malacha and putting it back together again. So that's the reason why Rav Yochanan says that once you have a menorah that is made up of pieces, of parts, and because of this concern that it's going to break apart and you're going to want to put it back together again, and that would be violating a malacha, it's for that reason, and really having nothing to do with muksa, that Rav Yochanan prohibits the movement of this menorah on Shabbos. So basically what the Gemara now is doing is it's departing from giving an explanation that has anything to do with muksa, not because you're koveil l'makom, but simply because of another gzera d'rabbanan, that this menorah, a person will be tempted to put it together, and for that reason, the Chachamim prohibited its movement on Shabbos. Now Rashi says that if I took this menorah and put it back together again, one would be violating a malacha because you're osek kli, because you're making a kli. So one would be tempted to suggest over here that this is an issue of binyan, that this is like building. However, the consideration, the counter consideration, is that we have a general rule of ein binyan v'estira b'kelim, that there is no malacha of building when it comes to a kli. Meaning the malacha of binyan, the malacha of taking something apart, is only for only something that is like a building, something connected to the ground. But if it's a kli, so ein binyan v'stira v'kelim, that's a general rule. So certainly there is an argument to make, that we're talking about the malacha of binyan. However, the counter argument is that generally speaking, we say ein binyan v'stira v'kelim. And if we're not talking about the malacha of binyan, so then what malacha are we talking about? So then I would suggest that the obvious other choice would be makeh bepatish. That once you put the menorah back together again, and once you put that last piece in, so now you're putting the finishing touch on an item, it's the final hammer blow, and one would be in violation of makeh bepatish. That's probably what Rashi is describing over here, but again, a lot of conjecture simply because Rashi only uses the words osikli. Back to the Gemara. So, ihachi my time to Rav Shimon Malachi Shashari. So the Gemara says, fine. So now we have given a new understanding of Rav Yochanan, why one is not allowed to move a menorah on Shabbos, because the menorah in question over here is a segmented menorah, and as a result of that, the Chachamim were concerned that we're going to be tempted to put it back together again if it falls apart. And so this is not a muksa issue, this is a gzerah d'rabbanan for fear that you're going to put it together. So the Gemara says, but if that's true, then what exactly is the position of Reish Lakish? So the Gemara says, okay, so what we're going to do over here is that we're going to give a similar explanation. It's just going to be slightly more subtle. My chulius over here, the Gemara says that when we're talking about a segmented menorah, we don't really mean it's segmented, meaning it's not a menorah that's made up of pieces, of parts, but ke'ein chulius des bechidke. It just happens to be that this menorah over here is clearly not made of one, the menorah does not give the impression that it is made out of one piece. It's not a flat menorah where it's clearly made up of one piece, but rather chidke. There are grooves in the menorah, meaning that the manufacturer of this menorah put in grooves so that it looks like a segmented menorah, but the truth of the matter is that it's not segmented. And so over here now, the subtlety and the debate that now exists between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish is that the reality is that this menorah is one piece and that this menorah is not going to fall apart. And you're not going to be tempted to put it back together again. However, because it looks like a segmented menorah, so now the debate between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish is that the gzera of not using a segmented menorah on Shabbos is going to be extended to a menorah that at least looks segmented. It's got grooves in it so that it looks segmented. And that's now the debate between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rav Yochanan says that the gzera will extend even to such a scenario. And Reish Lakish says, no, the gzera is only for a menorah that's actually segmented, but not one that looks segmented. Okay, so Adkan, so that really is a long discussion regarding whether or not Rav Yochanan prohibits the moving of a menorah. Well, he does. It's just a question now of why. We thought that it was related to muksa, and the Gemara says, no, the menorah itself is not related to muksa, it's related to a separate gzera as we just outlined. Hilkach. And now before the Gemara moves on to another point, the Gemara just wants to conclude regarding the menorah. Chulios ben gedola ben ketana asur l'taltala. If the menorah is actually made up of pieces, So then one is not allowed to move the menorah, and it doesn't matter whether the menorah is big or whether it's small. Gedola nami dies bechitke. Now, if it's a large menorah that has grooves in it, meaning it's really one piece, but it's got grooves, so it looks like a sectional menorah. Gzera to gedola dechulios. Well, there is no debate, because generally speaking, a large menorah is in fact made out of pieces. And if this menorah, which isn't made out of pieces, but looks like it is, so then one can easily confuse the large menorahs. Ki pligi biktan dis bechitke. The debate between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish is regarding a small menorah that has grooves in it. Meaning in reality it's one piece, but it looks like it's sectional. And under those circumstances, there's a debate. Marsava gazrina, marsava lo gazrina. You see, a small menorah, many small menorahs are made out of one piece. Some small menorahs are made out of sections. And over here, when I have this menorah that has grooves in it, and it looks sectional, so over here, does the gzera extend? And that's the debate between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rav Yochanan says it does, Reish Lakish says it does not. So the Gemara is just simply now further refining where exactly there would be a debate between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish regarding the menorah. Okay. Now, continuing back to our discussion from yesterday. What does Rav Yochanan hold regarding Muksa? So again, the report that came to us from Rabbi Yitzchak, that Rav Yochanan holds like Rav Yehuda, the Gemara is now going to go back and challenge this very notion. Umi Amar Rav Yochanan Hachi. Is Rav Yochanan really of the opinion that the halacha falls like Rabbi Yehuda, and that the scope of muksa is going to be wide, like Rabbi Yehuda says? The Vahama Rav Yochanan halacha kistam mishnah, but as we say throughout Shas, Rav Yochanan says that when there's an anonymous mishnah, so that is a tip, that's a tell, and that tells us that the halacha follows like that anonymous mishnah, meaning that when Rav Yehuda Hanasi edited and finalized the mishnayos, so Rav Yehuda Hanasi, by giving anonymity to any particular mishnah, is indicative of the fact that the halacha falls like that particular mishnah. Utanan, and we learned in a mishnah. Now this is the mishnah in Kalim, and for us it represents Chazara. We just went over this mishnah in Kalim, and now we get to go over it again from the 18th parak of Masechta Kalim. So we are discussing a wagon, and the wheels on the wagon. Muchni shalab is manchihi nishmetes. Now these wheels are detachable, and therefore in Chibola there is no connection between the wheel and the wagon, even while they're physically connected, halachically they're not connected, and we already described this back then. It basically means that, let's say, for example, the wagon itself becomes tameh, the wheels do not. Let's say the wagons become impervious to tumah because the wagon's too big, the wheels still are susceptible to becoming tumah. This was Rashi's explanation as we went through a couple days ago. And einim dedes imam. On top of that, we're not going to be measuring the wheels together with the wagon. And again, going back to Rashi's pshat, Rashi explained that in order for a kli to become tame, it has to be under a certain size. And we're talking about the volume of 40 sa'a. The volume of 40 sa'a, if the wheels are detachable, when measuring the wagon to see whether or not the wagon exceeds the size, it's not susceptible to tama, the wheels are not measured together with the wagon. If, let's say, the wagon itself exceeds the size of 40 sa'a, and the wagon now goes over a cemetery. This is Rashi's pshat also that he offered a couple days ago. And the wagon goes over the cemetery. So the contents that are in the wagon are going to be protected, are going to be shielded from the tumas ohel. However, the wheels are not. And if the wheels have any kli inside of them, so then those items are going to be tame with tumas mace. And finally, in Gorno Sabashabis Mismanche Yesh Alamas. If the wheels have money in them, the wheels over here have a base kibble. There are some sort of compartments within the wheel where it can hold money. So one is not allowed to move the wheels on Shabbos when the money's in it. So ha ain alem sharya. Now the diuk. Now this is the second time we're making this diuk. We made it a couple of days ago. We're making it again. And the implication is that if there's no money in the wheel, then one is allowed to move the wheel and roll the wheel. Now, the simplest way to read the Mishnah is that when was there money within the wheel? It was during the Ben Hashmashos period. And then sometime over Shabbos, the money came out of the wheel. So at that point in time, now this wheel is no longer subject to the rules of Muksa. Now, as we already point this out once, then let's say it again. Whose position is that? It's got to be Rabbi Shimon. It's got to be. Because Rabbi Shimon does not subscribe to the principle of Migu. So despite the fact that there was money in the wheel during the Banish Mashus period, nevertheless, once the money has been removed, it's just simply the wheel now is no longer muksa. And because if I subscribe to the viewpoint of Rabbi Yehuda, once there is money in the wheel during the Banish Mashus period, this wheel is going to be muksa for the duration of Shabbos, even though money has been removed subsequently on Shabbos itself. So the simple way to read this Mishnah is that it's going like Rabbi Shimon. This is an anonymous Mishnah. Rav Yochanan taught us that the halacha follows like an anonymous Mishnah. So it would therefore follow that Rav Yochanan passes like Rabbi Shimon. Okay, that's all the argument. The Gemara counters. Amar Rabbi Zera, Tehi Mishnah Sen, Shalo Ye'alav, Ma'os Ben Kol Ben Hashmashos, Shalo Lishbor Dvarav Shal Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Zera says, here's what we could suggest. It's not the simple reading of the Mishnah in Caleb, but we could suggest that when the Mishnah was describing where the wheel has money in it, we're not talking about where the wheel had money in it during the Banish Mashos period. We're talking about that during the Banish Mashos period, it had no money in it. It therefore is not established to be Muksa. Somehow on Shabbos itself, somebody put money in it. So during that period of time, it's going to be Muksa. But once the money is removed, so it's not going to be Muksa. Meaning even Rabbi Huda will agree that if something on Shabbos is not set and designed as a status of Muksa, and then on Shabbos itself, there happens to be Muksa on it, so temporarily while the muksa is on it, so you can't move it. But once the muksa is removed, so then you are allowed to move it. Remember, we discussed the case of the bed and the money on the bed. So as long as the money wasn't on the bed during the bed of Shmashos period, so then the bed does not have the status of muksa. Here too as well, we could suggest that that's the pshat in the Mishnah and Kalim, and thereby the Mishnah and Kalim could in fact be going like Rav Yehuda, and therefore we have no inconsistency within the shita of Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan fundamentally agrees with Rav Yehuda, and the Mishnah and Kalim could be interpreted to be explained like the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Amar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. Continuing the Gemara, we're in Membav Amad Aleph. We are approximately halfway down. Amar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, Pamachas Halach Rabbi Diuspera. There was one point in time Rabbi traveled to the town of Diuspera, Vahora Bimnorik Rabbi Shimon Benair. Now, what he did is he paskened in the menorah like Rabbi Shimon does so regarding a ner, regarding a lamp. This requires a explanation. What exactly was meant by that? Meaning, are we saying over here that what Rabbi Paskin is that in the case of the menorah, he paskened just like Rabbi Shimon does regarding a ner? And what we're suggesting over here is that really he offered two psakim. One psak regarding the issue of menorah, and the other psak regarding muksa. And what Rebbe is saying is that just like I paskin by muksa, lekula, as a leniency, so too I'm going to be paskin as menorah as well. That's one way to understand what Rebbe did. Now, in yesterday's daf already, we discussed and did not conclude whether or not Rebbe passes like Rebbe Yehuda or whether he passes like Rebbe Shimon. But at least now, there are two possibilities. Odilma, the other possibility is that no. Horeb b'mnor le'isura. And maybe as far as the menorah is concerned, so Rebbe was being stringent regarding the menorah, and Rebbe was saying that you cannot move the menorah, much like Rav Yochanan issued such a psak as well. And again, the menorah in question over here, because we already highlighted that, the menorah that is actually segmented, you're not allowed to move. That is Gzeira d'Rabbanan. The menorah that's clearly one piece, you are allowed to move. We're talking about the one that has grooves in it, like we discussed earlier this morning. Anyway, Horeb b'menorah l'isura, that Rebbe was being machmir regarding the groove menorah. Uche Rebbe Shimon b'ner l'hatera. And as far as ner is concerned, so there he passed like Rebbe Shimon, and he was being Mako as far as the category of muksa is concerned. So basically, the Rebbe's statement was somewhat ambiguous, and the Gemara now offers two explanations of what Rebbe's ruling was. Take it, the Gemara leaves this question unresolved. The Gemara does not have clarity on what exactly Rebbe ruled regarding the menorah. The Gemara tells us some quick anecdotes. Rebbe Malkiya ikla lebe Rebbe Simlai v'tilta shraga. Rebbe Malkiya went to the house of Rebbe Simlai, and he moved the lamp. It was lit before Shabbos, and it went out, and he moved it. Meaning, he passed on like Rabbi Shimon. The ikved Rabbi Simlai. Now, Rabbi Simlai was very upset, because Rabbi Simlai did not feel that the halacha falls like Rabbi Shimon. He felt that it was going like Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, that's one quick anecdote. Another quick anecdote. Rabbi Yossi Galila Ikla Lasra, the Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina. Again, a visit by one Amor to another Tilta Shraga, and he moved the lamp on Shabbos. Again, same story. It was that lamp that was lit that Shabbos. It went out. He moved it after it went out. The Ikbed Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, and Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina was upset. And so what we get from these two anecdotes is that there was a major debate, even in the time period of the Amorayim, exactly which viewpoint to follow regarding Muktzah. Should we be following the viewpoint of Rabbi Shimon or that of Rabbi Yehuda? So again, this debate raged on even through the period of the Amorayim. The Gemara tells another story. Rabbi Abba, ki ikhal asrid, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, have a metal to shraga. Now, as far as Rabbi Abba is concerned, so did he subscribe to Rabbi Shimon or to Rabbi Yehuda? And the Gemara says, interestingly, it depends where he was. If he was in Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's community, so metal to shraga, so then he would move the lamp. Again, after it went out, he would move it. But in other words, he subscribed to Rabbi Shimon. And ki ikhal asrid, Rabbi Yochan lava metal to shraga. But when he went to the town of Rev Yochanan, he did not move the lamp. And the Gemara says, Manavshach. Now the Gemara says, Rabbi Abahu. So he was and I'm saying this now as just part of the Hava Minam, he seems to be a fair-weathered fan. Whether or not he subscribed to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, just depend on his location. But the Gemara says, but that's not how halacha works. Manavshach. Ika Rabbi Yehuda Svirulei, Leavika Rabbi Yehuda, Ika Rabbi Shimon Svirulei, Leavika Rabbi Shimon. Well, let him follow consistently whoever he holds like. And why is it exactly that as he's going from town to town, so he's just going to be following what the local psak is? Doesn't he have his own ruling? So the Gemara says, and probably you would intuit this answer, La'olam ki Rabbi Shimon Sfirlei. No, really fundamentally he holds like Rabbi Shimon. And umishum kvoted the Rabbi Yochanan who de lo hava avid. But when he went to the town and community of Rabbi Yochanan, he knew that Rabbi Yochanan passed like Rabbi Yehuda. And so out of respect for Rabbi Yochanan, so Rabbi Abau did not move Muksa on Shabbos, even though he felt that it was Motor, meaning because he passed like Rabbi Shimon, but because he was in the community of Rabbi Yochanan, out of respect to Rabbi Yochanan, so therefore he was stringent to subscribe to Rabbi Yochanan's viewpoint. I'm Rabbi Yehuda. Continuing now in the Gemara. Shraga de Mishcha Shar Latultule. If I have an oil lamp, so that you're allowed to move on Shabbos. The nafta aser Latultule. But if the fuel that's used is nafta, so then one is not allowed to move it. Now, Rashi's understanding over here is that Rabbi Huda is assuming like the position Rabbi Shimon, that normally one is makel and one is allowed to move because Rabbi Shimon has an extraordinarily limited scope of muksa. And so therefore, if this lamp was fueled with oil after it goes out, so Rabbi Shimon allows to move it. However, if it was fueled with nafta, now nafta we already discussed back in the second perek, right? Some sort of very foul-smelling fuel, and even Rabbi Shimon would not allow you to move it. And the only thing that's done with this lamp is it's lit. There is no other functionality to it, and even Rabbi Shimon would agree that this is something that cannot be moved after it goes out. This is what Rabbi Yehuda tries to argue. Rabbi Rav Yosef, Darmi Tavayo, Denafta Nami, Sharlet Tutulei. And Rabbi Rav Yosef says, no, there's no distinction to be made. According to Rabbi Shimon, much like he allows for the movement of a lamp that was lit with oil, so too he would allow the movement of this lamp that was lit with nafta. And the Gemara gives us the following story. Rav Avya ikla lebei Rava. So the story goes with Rav Avya visiting Rava. Hava me'isan bekari betina. Now it happens to be that Rav Avya, after traveling, his shoes were really dirty. They had a lot of mud on them. Ativa apurye kame de Rava. And he put his shoes up on the couch. Okay. So obviously there is a discussion to be had regarding manners and going into other people's houses and what you should and should not do. Okay. Obviously a little bit of common sense over here, but let's just follow the story as the Gemara reports it. Ikbed Rava Bailitzure. Rava was really upset with Rav Avya, and he wanted to bother Rav Avya. So Amalei, so he says to him the following, by time of Rabbi Rav Yosef Darmi Tarvayu Shraga Danafta Nami Shar Litutule. And to bother him, so he asks a question that he's pretty confident that Rav Avya cannot answer. And I understand that this is a strange way to bother somebody, but But look, they, you know, their lives were Torah, and they always were talking in Torah. And so therefore, even in a conversation that revolved around Torah, but if I know that he's not going to have an answer to this question, that's obviously annoying. Okay, so Rebbe looked to annoy Rav Avya. Okay. Why wouldn't he just simply say to him directly, hey, it bothers me that you put your shoes on my couch? Okay, so as I often say this, and I really believe this, we don't have the full story that's given to us. We're given snippets and parts of the story, and maybe if we understood a little more context behind the story, we would understand why they're not having a direct conversation about what really bothered Rava. But anyway, at least in this conversation now, the reason why the Gemara is citing this is because we're going to be learning something regarding our particular topic. So Rava asks his guest, so Shraga de Nafta Namishar Litzatule. So remember, Rava and Rav Yosef, they both say that if the lamp was lit with this foul-smelling fuel, so according to Rabbi Shimon, you're still allowed to move that lamp. Why? Meaning to the argument that we just made moments earlier, and Rabbi Yehuda clearly subscribes to this argument, it's really foul-smelling, and nobody's really going to want to use it for any other purpose other than illumination. So he says to him, so he says, well, that's not true. There is functionality to this kli after it went out, and that is that you could use it to cover another kli. So elamiata called sorosha b'chasam etaltalin. Ho v'chazel l'ksuya b'humana. Oh, really? So just because I can use an item in order to cover another item, so you're telling me as a result of that, it's no longer subject to the rules of muktzah according to Rabbi Shimon? And you mean to tell me that means that according to Rabbi Shimon, you can move stones on Shabbos? And by the way, just like a small little window over here, in that even within Rabbi Shimon, who has a very limited scope of muktzah, it seems pretty clear from the Gemara's discussion over here that he would not allow for the moving of a stone. Now, what's the difference between the stone and everything we've been discussing up until now? So the Gemara is actually going to be very revelatory on this point. And the Gemara says, Amar Lei, so this is now Rav Avya defending his answer. Ho v'chazia l'ksuye. I lost my spot. I'm back. Ho v'chazia l'ksuye b'humana. Sorry. Kol tsroros. I'm just going back. Elamiata, this is Rava countering. Elamiata called Sorosha Bechatsa Metaltan, Hove Chazi Luxuya Beimana. Okay. So does that mean now you can move a stone? Just because the stone has the ability to cover a Kli. So this is now Rav Avya's response. Amalei, Ha'ika Toros Kli Allah, Ha'leika Toros Kli Allah. So Rav Avya's counter to this is as follows. When it comes to a lamp, so it has a shame Kli. And because it has a shame Kli, so therefore, Rabbi Shimon allows its movement on Shabbos. Number one, it starts off as being a kli. Number two, it has functionality. And therefore, Rabbi Shimon therefore has an allowance that one is allowed to move it on Shabbos. Masha'enke, when it comes to a stone, it does not have a shem kli on it. And because it does not have a shem kli on it, so even though Rabbi Shimon has a much narrower scope of muktzah, but even according to Rabbi Shimon, in order to move it, it has to have a status of being a kli. And by virtue of the fact that a stone does not have the status of being a kli, even Rabbi Shimon would not allow you to move it on Shabbos. Again, another reminder of what we learned earlier. Obviously, if the stone has utility and was set aside before Shabbos to be moved, so one can move it. Remember, we discussed the stones that were used for sanitary reasons after one goes to the bathroom. So those are stones which admittedly are not a kli, but at the same time, were designated before Shabbos to have usage. So even as we say that a stone is not a kli, one is not allowed to move it on Shabbos, but there even are exceptions to that, as we just got done discussing. Milo Tanya, the Gemara now, as we turn to the top of the next Amud. And once again, Rav Avya is supporting his viewpoint that according to Rabbi Shimon, when something has the status of a kli, so then it is in fact something that one would be able to move on Shabbos. As we turn to the top of the Amud Beis, Hashirim v'hanizmim v'atabaos, when we're talking about these types of jewelries. Harehein k'chol ha'kelem hanital b'chatzer. So, they're like any other utensil. V'amr ula matam, and I'm sorry, and they can be moved. V'amr ula matam, ho v'ika toros kli alaha. And ula, an explanation, says because they have a shame kli. So, hachanami, ho v'ika toros kli alaha. Same thing over here. It has a shame kli, and because it has a shame kli, so one is allowed to move them according to Rabbi Shimon. So Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak Baruch Rachmana Deloksife Rav LaRav Avya. Now Rav Nachman Yitzchak says that Baruch Hashem, that Rav did not have the opportunity to embarrass Rav Avya, meaning the purpose of Rav Avya asking him these questions is because he wanted to embarrass Rav Avya because he was so upset with Rav Avya putting his dirty shoes on his couch. And Baruch Hashem, that Rav was not successful in embarrassing Rav Avya. Okay, admittedly, there's a lot of tentacles to the story that need clarification. And also, admittedly, I don't have the clarification for all the points of the story. Why wasn't there direct conversation between Rav and Rav Avya? The Gemara clearly over here says that Rav was not correct for attempting to embarrass Rav Avya. How could Rav be even have this attempt to embarrass? So I understand that there are a lot of considerations over here in the story itself. And I don't have good explanation. But in the meantime, however, certainly what we get out from this is a distinction between something that has the shame kli versus something that does not have the shame kli. And when Rabbi Shimon gives an allowance to move basically anything on Shabbos, but anything has to be something which has a shame kli on it. But if it's like something like a stone that does not have the status of a kli, so even Rabbi Shimon with his limited scope would put this under the category of muksa. And therefore, even Rabbi Shimon would not allow you to move it. We're in Mimvav Amud Beis. And we are about 6-7 lines down from the top of the Amud. We're continuing the Gemara Ramile Abai L'Rava. The Gemara now notes what we seem to have is a stira. So, Tanya, we learned in the Brisa, Moser Hashem and Shebaner v'Shekara Aser. Any leftover lamp that's in the bowl is going to be Aser after the flame goes out. Rabbi Shimon Matir. And Rabbi Shimon allows it. Okay, so again, we know this, but the Gemara just simply wants to review. And we're setting ourselves up for a stira. Amal Rabbi Shimon Laisle Muksa. Rabbi Shimon does not subscribe to Muksa. Uriminu, and on the other hand, Rabbi Shimon Amar, Kol Shein Mumun Ikar Me'erev Yom Tov. However, we do have a clear psak that was issued by Rabbi Shimon regarding a bechor. Now, when it comes to a bechor, so when you have your firstborn animal that's being born in your flock, so this animal automatically has the status of being, of having kedusha, and it has to be given to a kohen, and it has to be offered. In the Beis HaMikdash as a carbon b'chor. And we discussed this extensively in Masechta B'choros. Over here, however, we are discussing the following. Now, obviously, post Churban Beis HaMikdash, so one is not going to be able to offer it as a carbon. What do you do with your b'chor, with all the b'chor that are born after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and quite frankly, even while the Beis HaMikdash is around? Let's say you're just simply not within proximity of the Beis HaMikdash, but certainly... the problem is highlighted even more after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. What do you do with your Bechor? So, we discussed this extensively. What you have to do is you have to wait till it gets a mum. It gets a blemish. And with a Bechor, once it gets a blemish, so then the Kohanim can eat it. Now, this is not like other Karbanos. Other Karbanos, when it gets a mum, so it needs a pigeon, you need to redeem it. And then, and only then, can one eat it. But when it comes to the Bechor... So the Kohen is given the Bechor, and he has to wait until a blemish comes on this Bechor. We discussed the Bechor extensively in terms of who's responsible to watch the animal until it gets a blemish on it. Okay, fine. But and that's not our topic for today. But the Rabbi Shimon now offers the following ruling. And that is that if, let's say, you had a Bechor going into Yom Tov, and the mum was not there before Yontif, so the animal now is muksa. Right? Rabbi Shimon says, Ein ze min amuchan. It does not have the status of non-muksa, or to say it clearly, it's simply muksa, going into Yontif. And so the Gemara says, that I don't understand. When I lit the lamp going into Shabbos or in Yontif, well, let's talk about Shabbos. When I lit the lamp going into Shabbos, so once the lamp goes out, so according to Rabbi Shimon, it's no longer muksa. In other words, once the reason of muksa goes away, i.e. the lamp goes out, so Rabbi Shimon allows you to move it. So the same thing should be said regarding the Bechor. When it was non-blemished, so fine. So you can't make, the Kohen can't make usage of it. But once the blemish comes, and even if it comes on Yantav, so why isn't Rabbi Shimon makel in that scenario? What's the difference between the cases? It's a strong question. Hachi Hashaba, Rabba feels that there is a way to resolve. And Rabba says the cases are not comparable. When it comes to lighting a lamp, so you know what's going to happen. It'll light for an hour, 2 hours, however much oil you put in there. But it's going to go out. And so therefore, Rabbi Shimon, who doesn't subscribe to the concept of migu, and therefore is of the opinion that you know it's going to go out sometime over Shabbos, and you're expecting it to go out, and as a result of that, Rabbi Shimon does not put this under the category of muksa, once it goes out. Hacha, but over here, when it comes to your bechor, Adam Yoshev Masapa Masayi Bomom, an animal does not trend towards becoming a blemished animal. As we discussed extensively back in Bechoros, for an animal to become a Bomom, so a person cannot put a blemish on the animal, it has to happen organically. And so over here, there are a lot of things to happen, a lot of dominoes have to fall in the same direction in order for this bechor to be considered a blemished and edible animal to the kohen. And the Gemara just simply goes through, here's what needs to happen. So first of all, the animal has to get blemished, and that blemish has to occur organically. That's one. It has to be a blemish that is a permanent blemish. Something where the animal is going to heal is not considered halachically a mum. And even if it does get blemished, when it comes to an animal and attaining the status of being a blemished animal, it has to be that you have to show it to a chacham, meaning somebody who is expert in the field of determining that this mum is a mum kavua. Remember, we learned together that Rav spent 18 months on the farm in order to learn the anatomy of the animal so that he can receive a smicha, so that he can be matir mum bebecharos. And that was an 18-month postdoc. So you see over here that this is something where the animal has to get a blemish. The blemish has to be a permanent blemish. You have to be able to see a chacham. So Rabbi Shimon says that the likelihood of all this happening on Yontif itself is so unlikely that even Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion that this is going to be considered moksa. Meitiv Rami Bar Chama. This explanation is challenged. Mafir Nadar B'Shabbos. Because we know the halach is that you could be made for a neder on Shabbos. And we're going to learn together that this is specifically a neder that is going to affect Shabbos itself. And a person can be released from a neder that is for the purposes of Shabbos. Now, the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. Now the Gemara says, now based on this argument that we just gave regarding a bechor and a blemish, where so many things have to line up in order for the bechor to be eaten on Yontav, and therefore we're going to assume that the person did not have this bechor in mind, the kohen didn't have it in mind. So the Gemara says, why don't we say that regarding the same thing with a woman who made a neder? How do we know that her husband is going to hear about it and annul it? So Hasim k'dera pichas mishmei derava, damer pichas mishmei derava, kol anderes adas ba'ala hino deres. So the Gemara says, no, the cases are not comparable. When a woman makes a neder, she does so with the understanding, with the implicit understanding, that only if her husband is in agreement with it. So over there, her mindset going into Shabbos, into Yontif, is that there only will be a chalos, it will only take effect, only if my husband is in agreement of it. And so therefore, her mindset is that she is waiting for her husband to confirm or annul the neder. Tashma, the Gemara says, Nishan l'darm shal tzorach ha-Shabbos b'Shabbos. If one made a neder, so and it is going to affect his Shabbos, so then therefore he can go to a chacham and ask to be released from it. This is she'elas chacham. V'yamai, the Gemara says, le'ma mi'yema de'mezakek le'chacham. And again, let's try to use our argument. How do you know that you're going to meet a chacham? And the Gemara says, hasam I lo mezakek le'chacham sagle b'shlosha hedyotos. So the Gemara says, okay, but for She'elas Chacham, it doesn't have to be per se a Chacham. You can replace a Chacham with Gimel Hejotos, three people, three guys. Now we know this on Erev Rosh Hashanah. We have the minhag of being Matir Neder. So you just all you need is three guys, and that's easy to come by. So hachem yemid the mezakik lechacham. So the Gemara says fine. When it comes to the Bechor, the Gemara is contrasting. But when it comes to the Bechor, for a Bechor, a hedgeot is not going to work, as we already got done saying. A Rav went out to the farm for 18 months. You need a Chacham. So over here, it's not going to be that easy to just simply come by a Chacham. And by the way, let's just remind each other. We're compounding that together with the fact that the animal going into Yontif was not a Bamum. So first of all, it has to get a mum. It has to be a mum kavua. And then on top of that, you have to get a chacham. So the cases are simply not comparable. Ramile Abaye li Rav Yosef. Mi amar Rabbi Shimon kafta mutalataltala. So Abaye says to Rav Yosef, again, the Gemara is probing within the sheet of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says that once a lamb goes out, one is allowed to move it. So kafti lo kafta lo. So my time up. So the Gemara says, now while the lamp is actually lit, one is not allowed, even Rabbi Shimon does not allow you to move it. Now why should that be? So the Gemara suggests, Dilma Bahadi Danakali Kafta. It's very simple. Because while the lamp is lit and you pick it up and you move it, so it may go out. And you may be in violation of Kivui. So Hashamili Le Rabbi Shimon Da Amar Davashina Miskavin Motor. Now the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. This is the same Rabbi Shimon who we said consistently throughout our Masechta. This is one of the most fundamental issues that we're going to keep bringing up again and again in the Masechta, and that's the Davashena Miskave. If I pick up the lamp that is currently lit on Shabbos, and it happens to go out, but that wasn't my intention, and this falls under the category of a Davashena Miskave. And this is the same Rabbi Shimon who's of the opinion that a Davashena Miskave is mutter. Detanya Rabbi Shimon Omer, Agora Adam Kisei, Mita Besafsal, Uvavashali, Iskaven Lasos Chritz. And so we've seen this time and again in our Masechta. Rabbi Shimon allows you to drag a bench on Shabbos as long as there's no intention to make a groove in the ground. So you see that according to Rabbi Shimon, a davar she'eino miskaven is in fact going to be mutter. And so according to Rabbi Shimon, who doesn't subscribe to muksa, and the only reason why one would not be allowed to pick it up and move it on Shabbos, presumably, is because of a concern that it's going to go out. But okay, let's say it does go out. That wasn't your intention. And this is a davar she'eino miskaven, and Rabbi Shimon allows for a davar she'eino miskaven. Okay, so this obviously presents a significant challenge. Why does Rabbi Shimon have to wait until the lamp goes out in order to move it? So the Gemara is going to answer. We'll start the answer right now, and then tomorrow we'll give the conclusion of what the answer is. So let's start the answer. Kol hecha dechi mechaven ika isuri da'araisa, ki lo mechaven gaza Rabbi Shimon midrabana. So the Gemara suggests the following. If there was a kavana, and he'd be violating an Issa Daraisa, so Ki lo michavin gazer Rabbi Shimon midrabana. What the Gemara is suggesting is the following. Well, we have to look at what level Isser are we talking about. If the level of Isser that we're talking about is an Issa Daraisa, or if you had Kavana, you would have been violating an Isser Daraisa. So then even if you don't have Kavana, Rabbi Shimon would say no. This kind of davar she'eino miskaven, Rabbi Shimon does not allow. Kol hecha dechi mechaven ika Isser Darabanan. Now, if the action was done intentionally, the only thing that would be violated would be an Isser Darabanan. Kila mechaven shara Rabbi Shimon lechatchila. Then without Kavana, Rabbi Shimon would allow it. To put it more succinctly, the Gemara is basically saying, when does Rabbi Shimon say davar she'eino miskaven is mutter? Only by an Issa Darabanan, not by an Issa Daraisa. So Mesiv Rava, so Rava says, no, that can't be. It's not true. And Rava says, consider the following. Mochrik sus mochrin kedarkan. Uva vashu is kamen bechamen min mechamen b'kshamen min neyekshamen v'atznuim mafshulim b'makala achareihem. Now, in terms of those who are selling shatnes, so shatnes is an Issa Daraisa. So they could sell it in their usual manner. And their usual manner means that they are wearing the clothing, but only to model what the clothing looks like. And there is no intention to be wearing the clothing. Now, admittedly, over here, every time we get to this case of the person selling the shatnez, and he's modeling the clothing, and we're saying that according to Rabbi Shimon, it's a davar she'eino miskaven, and therefore it's mutter. So admittedly, this always gets a little bit challenging because This certainly seems like a case of psik resha, meaning even though his intention is not to wear the clothing, but he certainly is, even though it's not intended, he's certainly getting benefit from the clothing. And so this case always poses the challenge of psik resha. But right now, let's put that aside for a moment, and let's just focus on the basic point that we're talking about an Isser D'Oraisa. And Rabbi Shimon, because it's a Davar Sheino Miskaven, so therefore, he allows the person, the seller, to model the clothing, even though he's wearing shatnez, but it's a Davar Sheino Miskaven. Now, it happens to be the people who are tsanua, literally modest, but in this case, modest over here just simply means that they're even more detail-oriented regarding halacha. So what they're going to do is that they're going to put the shatnez clothing on a stick, and they're not going to model it themselves. Okay, but in other words, but the ikar halacha is that the seller is allowed to model the clothing. And now the Gemara formulates the question, v'ahachad d'chi mechavin yisur d'raisa ikah, lo mechavin shari Rabbi Shimon lechatchila. And so we're talking about something which is an isur d'raisa, and as long as it's a davar sheino miskaven, Rabbi Shimon allows it. And so, where we're left off with now, is that the answer that was proposed is not a satisfactory answer. The question was, according to Rabbi Shimon, who doesn't subscribe to Muksa, why do you have to wait for the lamp to go out before you move it? Why can't you move it while the lamp is currently lit? And if Rabbi Shimon doesn't subscribe to Muksa, so why not move it? And if your only concern is, well, maybe it's going to go out, okay, but that wasn't your intention. And as we just got done concluding, Rabbi Shimon says about davar sheino miskaven, even by an isur d'oraisa, it's mutter. So here should be mutter. And why does Rabbi Shimon have to wait for it to go out? Okay, wonderful question. The Gemara has so far not been happy with the answer that's been given. And we start off tomorrow morning at the bottom of the Amud giving an answer that the Gemara is going to be satisfied with. Let's review today's daf. Most of today's daf revolved around a continued discussion regarding the machlokas regarding muksa between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda and where exactly the Amoraim line up on this issue. And a good part of today's daf revolved around Rabbi Yochanan's viewpoint. Does Rabbi Yochanan go like Rabbi Shimon, or does he go like Rabbi Yehuda? It was reported in yesterday's daf that he goes like Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara just wanted to know, does this corroborate with other psukim that were offered by Rabbi Yochanan? The Gemara went through the scenario of menorah, where Rabbi Yochanan stands on a menorah, but the Gemara says that that's not necessarily related to muksa. It could be that the issue of menorah is a different issue altogether, and the Gemara therefore concludes that Rabbi Yochanan does in fact go like Rabbi Yehuda when it comes to muksa, and the menorah became a separate issue, and that pretty much is where the Gemara lands on the position of Rabbi Yochanan. Highlighted probably best with the incident regarding Rabbi Abahu, where when Rabbi Abahu was in the community of Rabbi Yochanan, so he was machmer like Rabbi Yehuda. So even though Rabbi Abahu himself held like Rabbi Shimon, but by Rabbi Yochanan, he knew Rabbi Yochanan's position that it was like Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore he went like Rabbi Yehuda as well. And we saw over the course of the daf, the Amoraim are back and forth on this issue, and there clearly was a debate that extended well into the period of the Amoraim in terms of whether or not to accept the Rabbi Yehuda model of Muksa or to accept the Rabbi Shimon model of Muksa. And where we ended today is on the question of Rabbi Shimon and the fact that he has to wait until the lamp goes out before he moves it on Shabbos. And the simple question is why? Why wait? Why not move the lamp even while it's lit? Even if the lamp were to go out, it's a davar sheino miskaven, and according to Rabbi Shimon, it should be mutter. There we leave off the question. Tomorrow, we conclude.